Welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. My guest is James Petras. Jim, it's great to have you back. I know there are issues on your mind. There certainly are issues on my mind. You see, with all the stuff I throw at you, the multiple daily articles I send to you, I'm eager to jump into whatever topic you want to address first, and I'm sure we'll cover things on both of our minds.
Well, Steve, the most obvious immediate point is the gradual buildup of U.S. military ground troops in Iraq and in Syria, and the escalation of the military rhetoric toward Russia, particularly the new offensive being launched in Ukraine against the federalists and pro-democracy movements in eastern Ukraine. And finally, the aggression in China, the chutzpah of the nerve, if you will, of Obama setting up or trying to set up a trading group in China during his stay in China, which excludes China, which was indeed extraordinarily provocative, but was dismissed by the Chinese and trumped effectively by proposing a free trade agreement of their own, which was much more inclusive and certainly much better grounded in the dynamic growth of China's economy. So we have all around the world a continuation of a policy which has led to a dead end, a military posturing which has prejudiced U.S. markets, U.S. Trade, U.S. investments in the Middle East, in regard to Russia, and in regard to Asia. This continuing military metaphysics, I call it, military posture, has its counterpart in the militarization of the U.S. economy and society, where Obama has expelled 2 million immigrants, many of those people working immigrants in agriculture, in order to uphold a very hostile attitude toward workers and also producers. Many farmers are complaining bitterly about the police raids undermining the fruit picking. Here in upstate New York, the apple pickers, for example, are furious with the Border Patrol, the immigration police that are now scouring the countryside and breaking into houses and rounding up churchgoers and decimating the farm worker population. So we have, again, the same phenomena, how militarization of American society prejudices the economy, prejudices the producing sectors of the American society in the name of national security. So overseas and abroad, overseas and at home, we have the same phenomena of how militarization undermines the nature of capitalism as we understand it. And how this obsession of both Obama and the incoming Republicans has taken no account of what's necessary to grow out of the deep economic crisis which most working people are facing.
Oh, indeed, Jim. That's a topic I revisit every now and then. And it's really astonishing and shocking that no matter how bad things get, the people in Washington, bipartisan consensus, the notion that Republicans or Democrats are different from Republicans, absolute rubbish. I mean, they're basically on the same page on the big issues. And they find ways of making things even worse than they already are. And we just keep descending down a black hole of the worst kind of policies. Jim, I just finished an article that I'll send out shortly on Obama renewing a 35-year-old national emergency with Iran, where no national emergency ever existed from day one, you know, going back to when the Shah was toppled, 1979. And Obama just renewing it, a national emergency, a non-existent national emergency is what I call it. And, of course, it's extremely belligerent, and it just belies the fact that any legitimate negotiations, so-called P5 plus one negotiations, negotiations going on to resolve the nuclear issues with Iran responsibly. And everybody knows in these negotiations that Iran's program is entirely peaceful, and Israel knows it, and U.S. intelligence knows it, and they continue with this charade. And I'm convinced that even if they come up with some kind of an agreement, it'll end up being a charade. It'll be meaningless.
Yes, and the powers behind the throne, the people that are driving this hostility to Iran, can be reduced to two people. The gambling mogul Adelson, who's put $100 million into funding Republicans, and Sabin, who's put the same amount into funding Democrats, and who unashamedly declared their first loyalty is to Israel, and Israel's agenda is centered on scuttling any peaceful agreement with Iran. And there you have it. The U.S. Congress is bought and controlled. The U.S. Executive branch, likewise, is incapable of disentangling their funding from the national interests of the United States. Most people in the United States, including, by the way, a poll recently of American Jews, that is normal American citizens, 80% are in favor of a peace agreement, nuclear agreement, with Iran. So here we have oligarchs in the United States, bona fide oligarchs, billionaires, buying and controlling the U.S. in the name of a community which they don't represent.
Pretty disgusting situation, Jim, and the fact that money controls politics in America makes the system absolutely corrupt. It's amazing. I don't know what the all-time low turnout has been in a U.S. election, Jim, but in the one of the articles I wrote about the November elections was a turnout of 38%, and in
it's
California,
lower than that. The New York Times reports 36%.
36%.
The
amazing.
Second lowest in all of history, exceeded only by 34% in 1942, that is over 60 years ago. And so we are sinking into an oligarchical system where a little over 15% of the electorate is engaged, because the rest of the population realizes that when oligarchs fund and control who the candidates are and what their policy, what's the point of voting? What's the point of voting for someone when you don't have any influence on what they're going to do when they're in office? And this is a realistic understanding. Unfortunately, the same 65 or so percent of the American public don't postulate an alternative.
No, they don't, Jim. And refraining from voting is one thing, but it certainly does nothing to change policy. The only way to change policy is sustained activism. And people who understand this stuff, and you and I are old enough to remember times when we really saw sustained activism, but we see none of it today. You know, little pockets of it. We had the Occupy Wall Street movement, but that faded away. And there really is nothing challenging the system now. So it just goes on, and that's the reason it gets worse and worse. And the real risk is we could end up with a very serious confrontation with Russia that suggests the possibility, certainly hope it won't happen, but the possibility literally of a nuclear confrontation. It's disgusting to think that something like that absolutely could happen when I never believed it would happen during the Cold War, and it never did.
Well, Steve, as a result of the U.S.'s military creep toward the heartland of Russia, that is military exercises in the Baltic, among the many states there, Estonia, Latvia, and the militarization of the Polish-Russian border, the power grab in the Ukraine, a stationing of American ground troops, etc. Russia has just announced they're going to send their airplanes and ships into the Caribbean and off the coast of Alaska. So this aggression by Washington is certainly going to provoke the Russians into taking countermeasures on our borderlands, our frontiers. And as these two forces creep together, the possibility of one or another shooting down a plane or torpedoing a boat, et cetera, becomes greater. And I think your signal of a possible nuclear war becomes more likely. The same thing goes with the U.S. Here's China's economy booming along at 7%, despite the fact that some of the financial reports, China's slowing down. Yeah, the U.S. should slow down at 7%. Idiots. Financial idiots. The U.S. Should produce the kind of advanced technology, electronics, iPhones that the Chinese are developing. This is pure nonsense. And the idea of isolating the most dynamic, biggest economy with the greatest amount of economic ties and with enormous outflows of capital around the world is the height of imbecility. I say this is clinical imbecility because you don't corral a dynamic country which has ties with three-quarters of the rest of the world and growing.
Oh, indeed not, Jim. And on the one hand, countries like China and Russia approach relations with other countries with carrots, not sticks. And U.S. policy
is exactly...
That's true.
And they're approaching each other. They're now a $400 billion gas agreement topped off with another hundreds of billions of agreements just this past few days. And so Russia and China are moving closer together because they share a common fear of U.S. aggression.
Jim, if I remember the number, I think it was something like 18 agreements agreed on in Beijing, but they weren't listed, including a second oil, a second gas agreement, and I guess with this gas, there's oil, but a second pipeline being built from Russia to China, a so-called Western route. The other one is called the Eastern route. They have specific names, but the first one, at least $400 billion, and depending on China's internal needs, it could end up being twice that amount. Now you've got this second Western pipeline. We're talking about an enormous amount of money involved, and it shows how countries can cooperate together and just ace out America. And it's great. And for European countries to go along with U.S. policy is absolute insanity. I think one day these countries are going to wake up and realize they're shooting themselves in the foot. And, you know, wanting to get along with America, but also wanting good relations with important countries like China and Russia, it's crazy not to do it.
Yes, Steve, and all this is taking place at a time when the West German, the German government is celebrating the fall of the wall. That is, the U.S. and in Europe are constructing new and oppressive walls. In the case of the United States, after bombing the Central Americans and terrorizing Mexico with this war on drugs, you get hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of refugees fleeing, and the U.S. building bigger fences with more police on the border. So they celebrate the fall of the Berlin Wall while they're building bigger and more oppressive walls to block out the refugees from U.S.-instigated wars in Central America, which killed over a quarter of a million people and are still terrorized by the police and military and anarcho gangs who are their accomplices. The same in Europe. They have walls that cause people fleeing from the wars that the U.S. launches in North Africa, Iran, and Syria now. Is 13 million people have been displaced just in Iraq and Syria by these U.S.-EU wars. And there are these legal and physical barriers to the entry of these refugees. And we don't have a leg to stand on when we talk about the pernicious effects of the Berlin Wall. How about the walls that the Europeans have constructed that have caused tens of thousands of refugees to die or drown in the oceans or be robbed, raped, and murdered by these refugee gangsters. So I think there's a lot of hypocrisy, but a very constant principle here. Walls are good if they keep out refugees from U.S.-instigated walls, U.S.-instigated wars, and they're bad when they defend communist economic systems. And furthermore, they forget that when the wall came down, the East Germans were never given a choice of what kind of relationship they wanted with the West, how much of their welfare and full employment policies they could keep. They were simply annexed. The German government in the West simply dictated, you will close down all your socialized programs, you will close down competitive factories and cooperatives, and you will submit to the dictates of our government. The East Germans were never consulted. They were never given choices. They were simply annexed and put in a second-rate position, which led to over 30% unemployment from 0 to 30, thanks to the so-called unification of Germany.
And Jim, you wrote about the same thing happening in Russia after the dissolution in 1991, and I've written about it as well. The fact that just the horrors inflicted on the Russian people with mass unemployment, factories closing, farmers losing out, everybody losing out, except the profiteers that made so much money. This was during the Yeltsin years of the 1990s. Just a horrible situation. And the same thing in South Africa after apartheid ended. So we have these horrible things going on. And my symbol, I agree with you, Jim, on the gross hypocrisy of the Berlin Wall coming down and the celebrations, not just in Germany, but of course making headlines at least across the Western world, maybe in other parts of the world as well. And my symbol of the hypocrisy was Israel's wall, the separation wall, that if I have my numbers right.
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned that.
Oh, I thought that was maybe the best example I could find. I mean, this horrific wall that when completed, 430 miles long, if I remember the number, six times the length of the Berlin Wall, and in some places twice the height, and of course just brutalizing the Palestinian people, and not a word, not a whimper about any of this or the issues you raised, Jim, in any of the U.S. media in the so-called celebrations that, again, you said, and I repeat, represent gross hypocrisy.
And look at what happened when Germany became united. It became much more powerful. It inherited 1.5 million highly skilled workers and engineers, professionals, for free. They were educated and trained under the communist government. This big infusion of German skilled labor led to West and East Germany, unified Germany, became a powerhouse, dominated the European Union, and as a consequence was able to impose the so-called austerity programs that led to prioritizing debt payments to bankers while it plunged the living standards downward to the point that over 50% of people under 30 years old in Southern Europe are unemployed. Secondly, the unified Germany and its new power allowed it to increasingly militarize its foreign policy, become an accomplice in the wars in the Middle East and in Syria, to the point of now training, sending military and police missions abroad to train puppet the troops of the NATO targeted countries. So that I think the effects of the annexation of East Germany are much more negative than they are positive. They did not bring prosperity to the Southern Europeans. They certainly militarized Germany's foreign policy. So I think in the balance sheet of world history, we can say that the annexation of East Germany had profoundly negative results on the world scale.
I don't think there's any question about that, Jim. And if we end up with a war with Russia, it'll put a giant exclamation point on your comment. And again, the possibility of that happening is certainly real. Nobody can predict it. Nobody wants it. But it certainly could happen. And indeed, the unification of Germany was all for the worst and not for the better.
Yes, Steve. And talking about the worsening situation, I just saw a report, a survey put out by the Federal Reserve, which shows that Obama, the so-called first Afro-American president, had a very negative net effect on the black community, far beyond any previous white president in terms of net wealth. The gap between the whites and the blacks has increased substantially during Obama's presidency. The inequalities in income have increased. The number of black unemployed industrial workers, not only in Detroit but elsewhere, has increased. So the fact of skin color has not had a positive effect in terms of improving the lives of the great majority of black people. Afro-American people have suffered. The best they get out of Obama is his occasional demagogic foray into the ghetto to shoot a few baskets and give these pompous lectures to the black unemployed workers about family responsibilities. He's responsible for the breakup for families because he's done nothing. He bailed out the banks in Wall Street and did nothing to invest in large-scale public works, which could have provided a lot of jobs for unemployed meatpackers, black meatpackers in Chicago, black auto workers in Detroit, steel workers in Pittsburgh. They were left out of the priorities of Obama's presidency, first or second time around. And as a result, they're voting less and less Democratic, and they're not voting Republican. They're not voting.
You're not voting, Jim, and I would say there's a very good chance that a Republican will be elected president in 2016. But does it really matter, Jim? I mean, you know, Republican, Democrat, it really amounts to the same thing, just taking turns, either four-year cycles or eight-year cycles, and we stay in the same stew we've always been. And I must say, on the one hand, I'm ashamed to think that Obama makes Chicago his home. At least he's on the south side, and I'm on the north side. And it's not separation enough for me, but his record as a politician in the state senate, forget if he was a representative before becoming a state senator, but at least as a state senator in Illinois, he screwed the black population. He allied with real estate interests and just ethnically cleansed black people out, so the real estate interests could gentrify neighborhoods that they wanted to develop, and that was his record as an Illinois legislator.
Well, it's a sorry record, and it's unfortunate that so many young people didn't look at the background. Instead, they listened to his rhetoric, his duplicities as a demagogue who promised them everything and denied them everything. He promised to end the war, and he escalated the war. He promised to confront Wall Street, and he bailed out Wall Street to trillions of dollars. He promised a health program, which was totally privatized, as you pointed out, and became a big swindle for the big corporate health industry. Everywhere you look, he acted in the opposite direction from what he claimed to stand for. And this has generated a lot of hostility. And unfortunately, some of the right-wing politicians are exploiting this hostility by tacking on the word black, that the black president, that the black community is responsible for all of these betrayals. And I think this is the racist undertow that's behind the rise of the extreme right, the Tea Party people, etc. They're tagging the race label to the reactionary policies that have prejudiced Americans and given rise to a kind of neo-fascist right wing that is in the wings of power today.
Yeah, it's a very sad situation, Jim. Again, as bad as things get, things seem to progress to lower and lower levels, and I'm just shocked to think of what they may look like in another year or two or so, and wonder if we'll even survive what's going on. That's how bad things are. Jim, we've only got a couple of minutes left. I want to let you comment on anything else.
I think I'd like to finish on a more positive note. In Latin America, which, you know, I've spent 60 years and working in Latin America, visiting every country south of the border, the surprising results there, electoral results, is that the center-left, the what you might call the mildly progressive candidates, won out. The pro-U.S. candidates, the ones backed by Wall Street, lost. They lost in Brazil. They lost in Bolivia. They've lost in Ecuador. They lost in Venezuela. And there people are aware of what where their bread is buttered, and they weren't fooled by false promises or rhetoric or even the weaknesses of the center left. Some of them were pretty corrupt people, but faced with a threat to their welfare, their salaries, their health plans, they voted against the Wall Street backed candidates and in every country in Latin America.
It's so true, Jim. Latin America is no longer America's backyard. Let's hope the rest of the world stops being its backyard. And, of course, Obama's Asia pivot wants to make Asia America's backyard.
No, you know, that's not going to happen.
No, it won't happen. Absolutely won't happen. So, I mean, you get China, you get Russia. Russia certainly is part of the East, a huge country spanning Eurasia, and it certainly won't happen. But it won't stop America from trying, Jim. And and that's where you get into the possibility.
Well, the worst thing that's going to come up is the bipartisan free trade agreement, which Obama is pushing. That's going to cost millions of American jobs, lower standards, and decimate what's left of the welfare state, because everything will be subordinated to facilitating the movement of capital and goods, which prejudice what's left of American manufacturing sector.
Absolutely, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I wrote about it a couple of years ago, or even longer than that, and I just revisited it. I mean, it's a horrible, horrible bill. We're basically giving corporations supreme power and literally the power to exploit people, do any damn thing they want, and it's exactly the opposite of a kind of system that we want, Jim. We're just about out of time. It's been a great, great discussion. Go Biden, much
okay,
best,
stay
Jim.
Healthy, Steve. We're really pulling with you.
My main objective, Jim, to keep my health and keep going and keep turning out this stuff.
You're doing an excellent job, Steve.
I appreciate it, Jim. I look forward to another great discussion next month. Thanks, Jim.